welcome to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce, and I've got Kim and DJ here in the booth doing production. And Adrian is sick today, so she won't be on. So get better, hun, and we'll see you next time. So today's show's about homelessness. Homelessness here in London and abroad, and the issues that that don't seem to be going away. And so we've got some of the best of the best and the experts who are working on these issues on the show today. We've got Abe Udstrom later on in the show. We've got Chuck Lazenby from the Unity Project. And up first, we have Henry Easterbrook from Intercommunity Health and a whole bunch of other stuff. But just to introduce you to the thing, here's a short intro.
So last night in London, 2,000 people were homeless. That includes 650 sleeping in shelter and transitional housing. That includes 200 women who traded their body for a place to stay. 50 people sleeping in hospital or in cells. 10 people sleeping in parks or tents. And over 1,000 of the most hidden homeless, those living doubled up, couch surfing, crashing with friends, or staying in a drug house.
So first up, we have Henry, who's 14 years advocating for health outreach for people experiencing homelessness, primarily involved with direct service provision for people experiencing issues related to homelessness and addiction. He sits on the board of the London Homeless Coalition Steering Committee and also the board of the Advocacy Center for Tenants of Ontario. Hi, Henry.
Hey, how are you doing, Michelle?
Oh, thanks for taking time out of your busy day to talk to us.
You bet.
So homelessness, why do you do the things that you do?
Why do I do? Oh, wow. Well, I do the things that I do because I think that folks who are on the margins, who have all the gifts that the rest of us have except for the good fortune of a home, a decent income, and nutrition, deserve to have a place in our community. I think that's the answer I was looking for.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you. So that place in the community, what does that look like?
Well, safety first. You know what, the biggest thing I think that impacts people's ability to move on is a lack of safety. And the key problem is that if you have no decent income, then you have no access to safety. So how can you move on? The rates of social assistance for general welfare, Ontario Works, are insufficient to pay your rent and put food on your table. And as long as we have that existing, as it has really since Mike Harris days when he lowered the rates by 40%, then we're going to be stuck with rising levels of homelessness, particularly since there are no jobs and no real concrete job creation plans that make a long-term difference.
So can you talk about some of the stuff that you're doing to make this as better as we can?
Well, there's a few things that, I work in a multidisciplinary team. We have nurses, social workers, family doctor. And a couple of things that we do, I think, that are really important because, you know, we ourselves cannot change the situation of rampant homelessness here in London, except one-on-one. So, you know, the first thing that we do, I think, that is really important is we work on relationships. A lot of the folks that we see are episodically homeless, and they have been experiencing institutionalization and trauma since early childhood. So they haven't really, a lot of those folks haven't had a lot of positive relationships. So number one, we really work on positive relationships with the providers here. The other thing that we do a lot of is to ask people who aren't in this situation to really consider what it's like, to consider that, you know, when you have that lack of safety, when you have lack of nutrition, when your life expectancy is on average about 45 or 50, I think now, they're saying for someone who is chronically homeless that, you know, we ask people, taxpayers, voters, to really consider that and to consider that it's not a choice, it's not a lifestyle issue so much as it is dire poverty and terrible circumstances.
Yeah, and I mean, the affordable housing wait list is, what, 8.2 years or something here in the city?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's if you're, I mean, the city does what it can, I think, given that the hue and cry from taxpayers is, you know, no more taxes, and we have a mayor who has promised those taxpayers not to raise taxes. So, you know, how can we mitigate issues like homelessness when there have been no real sizable social housing starts in many, many years? There's been bits and pieces, but not enough. You know, against the rising tide of rates of homelessness, when you've got 20 or 30 new social housing places a year, it's not even a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, but when we talk about raising taxes for to solve homelessness, I mean, everything that I read says the same thing. It costs more to have someone homeless than to have them not homeless.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, the interventions that keep people going with that who have no address are pretty expensive, you know, particularly people who have addiction problems and experience poverty at the same time. It is quite expensive. Jail is very expensive. Shelters are very expensive. And, you know, in terms of, you're right, in terms of tax dollars, we could spend it more wisely. Even if it costs the same amount to put someone in a decent place and provide a level of support for someone without sufficient skills to maintain independent living, you know, I think that's a lot better solution than putting someone with mental health issues or, you know, severe emotional problem in jail. It just doesn't make sense to do that.
So basically, so, solving homelessness is going to reduce taxes, not increase taxes.
Well, you would like to think so. Yeah, it's I forget the exact amount, but somebody figured it out not so long ago how much it would cost to keep someone who is chronically homeless with addiction problems housed. And it still costs significantly less than it does to keep that same person in a provincial jail, and not really too much less than it does to keep someone in a shelter in terms of adding that support in. And that's what folks need, is they need support. The absence of, you know, a good solid family means for a lot of folks that, you know, unless you have a someone to support you to find the stake you have in life and in this community, then, you know, it's difficult to make positive decisions. It really is.
Exactly. So at Inner Community Health Center there, you've got your whole division that deals with people with no fixed address.
Yeah, we have a specific clinic within the center. We have, I forget how many patients we have all together, but, you know, there's probably, gosh, about a fifth of those that experience homelessness, and so that's specifically what our division, the health outreach for people who are homeless, that's who we're working with, that population.
And what does that program do?
Well, as I said, we have a broad range of services. We have a community health nurse who does a lot of emergency first aid and does a lot of patient teaching. There's actually two people in that position. And then there's two social workers who do a lot of counseling as well as advocacy and one-on-one support. Myself, and I also do a lot of advocacy and one-on-one support as well as advocacy at the local and the provincial level. And then we have two family doctors, one who works for anybody who is eligible to be a patient, and another who works specifically with women who are involved in doing sex work and have no address.
Wonderful. And I mean, those marginalized populations are pretty high at risk for homelessness, right?
They sure are. They sure are. You know, somebody said not so long ago, well, you know, homelessness is a mental health problem, or homelessness is an addiction problem. And, you know, maybe those are part of the reasons for homelessness. But really, the biggest and the root cause of homelessness is poverty and insufficient income.
Well, poverty and insufficient income causes addiction issues, so...
Well, yeah, absolutely. And certainly being on Ontario Works, if you can't get a job and you're on Ontario Works for 2-3 years, then I think that in itself is a disabling circumstance.
Yeah, my experience is that kind of isolation causes nothing that's going to be good for anyone.
Precisely.
Wonderful. So anything else on this topic that's close to your heart?
Well, I'd like to say thank you very much for the opportunity. Other than that, I really appreciate that you are promoting the idea that homelessness is not just a personal issue, but rather a community issue, and that the only way it can be solved meaningfully is for the whole community to have a stake.
Thanks a lot. What are the hours there at the clinic?
We have a drop-in, which is 9 until 3:30. Monday to Friday, except on Thursdays, we typically open at 10:30. We have meetings on Thursday mornings.
Wonderful. Okay, thanks for coming on. I know you've got a busy schedule today, Henry, but I really appreciate you coming and talking about this important issue.
Okay, my pleasure, Michelle.
Thanks.
Take care.
And we'll be back after this segment of the show called This Is Me, someone talking about their experiences.
Me.
This is what it's like
to be me.
To be me. This is what it's like to be me.
Our lives have been jumped off the track, right? Can't put it back. It's a cycle that is nasty to get out of because I'm in it. I can't be with my family. And maybe that's one of the reasons I do like to have my beer or my refreshments every day to wipe that out.
My name is Cody Brown. I am age 53, and I've been homeless for the age of 17. I am native, and my status is Oneida of the Thames. My parents didn't look after my well-being. I was found miles away from where, from your family. But I was young. I was an infant. I was younger than 2 years old. And I was picked up in a basket sort of thing. That's where I was dropped off. I was put in a foster home, which was Dutch Reformed, very strict. They didn't give me a chance to be who I am. I was kicked out of the house because I was no longer wanted by the government and no longer wanted by the family. So I set on my own, which was scary. I lived underneath bridges, it started. I lived under stairwells. In my opinion, one reason why that I am homeless and why other people are homeless, it's, there was no structure in my family. You need to be nurtured. When family has to be back to your family. The world's too fast right now. I'm sure a lot of it is our choice. But given the opportunity, not just to say, here's $250 for our money, but to have access to schooling, because I can't afford schooling. I can't afford housing. That's what homeless is all about. It's about money. You can't live without money, unfortunately. So make more affordable housing in a affordable area. I don't want to rent in a crack house. I don't want to have my food stolen. I want my own place. I wish there wasn't homeless. You know, the government has got to take a real serious look and not just a band-aid for so many years. Look after the homeless in the way you would want to be looked after. Not just, like I said earlier, not just handouts or something that the government gives you and hope it goes away. No, that's we need more people involved, more people to see what's going on with the homelessness. The more we get together and show our story, hopefully through organizations as yours, it'll improve the way people think of homelessness and homeless people.
And that was This Is Me. And, you know, that's sad. Are you there, Chuck?
Yeah.
Awesome. Wonderful. You got to listen to Henry there for a bit.
Yeah.
Chuck's joining us from the Unity Project, which is, you tell everybody what Unity is.
All right. The Unity Project, we have emergency shelter and transitional housing accommodations for men and women who are experiencing homelessness. We also provide one-to-one support for people to help create a plan and follow through with a plan to hopefully for self-sufficiency into the community. And we operate 24 hours a day and pretty much have our doors open to anybody kind of needing support in the moment. We also have a community support worker who works with people to obtain and maintain their housing, which that's just new to us for a full-time position just this January. And we also have a life skills program as well.
Wonderful. So when we talk about managing homelessness in the city, you folks are them.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the people that are doing all the work and struggling with this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you heard the gentleman there and talking about, you know, being Aboriginal and facing, you know, a lifetime. He's now 50 some odd years old, and, you know, he's been homeless since 17. You know,
yeah.
in my world, that's unacceptable.
Absolutely. It should be unacceptable for everybody, right?
Yeah, so where is that disconnect? I mean, why are we here?
Well, I mean, I think that it's complex. For sure. I think that there's a lot of things that contribute to especially chronic homelessness and persistent homelessness. I think that certainly income is a huge contributor. So just like Henry was saying, poverty, you know, is unless we can actually get people enough money to get a safe and stable place and to provide their own basic needs, you know, that's always going to be a problem, right? But I also think that we really need to kind of revision how we think of homelessness, right? And not that I have all the answers. I have lots of wonderful ideas, I think. But, you know, I just think our approach hasn't solved the problem, right? So we really need to re-strategize and rethink how we're approaching homelessness and included in that is thinking about it as poverty, right? And to make sure that we're actually providing adequate income and supports to people.
Yeah, so what are some of the creative ways we can tackle this?
Well, I think that, I do think that one of the things is that we need to make sure that the supports that do exist come from a compassionate place and have as little barriers as possible. One of the things that we find we're working with people a lot of the time on is actually navigating the system, you know, because it is difficult to access supports, right? Or to know where to go and to know how to advocate for yourself. So I think that's one thing we need to do is decrease the barriers that exist for people accessing support in the community and not make it so that people just feel dehumanized and devalued when they do have to access those supports. I mean, certainly we run an emergency shelter, but no doubt it's a Band-Aid solution, right? It's definitely not a permanent solution. And certainly I think emergency shelters should always exist in a community, but we need to have build supports around that so that they're not used over the long term or needed to be used for over the long term for individuals, that they would be used just for emergencies as opposed to kind of how they can be used right now, just because of the lack of options for people.
And you're probably like me, you're probably sick of sticking Band-Aids on things.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and, you know, not to say, I mean, we definitely, I think for, we're fairly unique as an emergency shelter because we're very small and accessible 24 hours a day with one-to-one support. So we do try our best to not be a Band-Aid, to create, you know, long-term kind of relationships with people if they need it. And to be there for people to respond right in the moment to their needs, but you know, without that affordable, safe, and secure housing stock available to people, it we're just always going to need to exist, you know. And it's really no place for anybody have to live in a shelter.
Oh, I understand. I run a 24-hour crisis line myself, and you know, so I fully understand that we really wish that we would never have to exist.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we realize that we're probably always going to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we probably will be too. Hopefully, just with not having to be overfull all the time, maybe we could just run at our, you know, occupancy that we wanted to. Or
no,
things like
wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, that would be really nice.
So we've been pounding on this forever, and from everything that I can see, it's getting worse, not better.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, the council currently is looking at budget cuts, and you know, they're cutting housing stuff, or it's on the chopping block, and I doubt you think that's a great idea.
Well, I do think that one of the things we need support from provincial and federal governments as well, right? I actually tend to think that London is trying its best within its current resources to come up with creative solutions to homelessness. And I think that the political will on a provincial and federal level, it isn't there to back that up. And I think that every city needs that support. You know, and maybe if we actually had a national housing strategy that, you know, put value statements around housing and how important it is for all Canadians to be housed in a safe and affordable way, maybe we could start to actually rethink, you know, the way we look at homelessness. But right now we just don't have that. We don't have that political will kind of at all levels of government, and we really need to work together to actually come up with solutions.
What, you mean Harper's government taking all the credit for housing first and then...
Right.
And then making public statements that housing's not a federal problem all in the same breath? That's problematic?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that kind of stuff, right? We need to get the message straight and actually be passionate about making sure everybody's housed, right?
Yeah. So what about Housing First?
Well, certainly Housing First is, you know, I think an excellent model to address especially chronic and persistent homelessness, to attach supports to an individual, get them in a house that they feel safe and secure in, and then actually look at what issues the individual is experiencing that may traditionally cause them to lose their housing and not be able to maintain it. So I think attaching supports, you know, one-to-one support that's available and ready to work through an individual according to what they want is absolutely an important piece of this solution.
I've done housing support. I run a community center called Alphabet Community Center, and housing is part of what we do, and in a big picture, and we run into it a lot, and it's extremely challenging.
Yeah.
And you have to be extremely creative to get people housed.
Yes.
What can we do to break down some of those, that craziness that is just so difficult? You know
what
I mean?
Isn't that a good question? I mean, I think one of the things is we need community engagement. So we need community engagement from not just politicians and social service workers, but we also need engagement from landlords, right? And we need to support landlords in housing people who they might consider to be a risk for them by supporting the person itself and supporting the landlord and creating solutions around that landlords can actually buy into. So I think that's a component of it. So the community needs to be involved on a broader level so that we're all understanding what the issues are, right, and actually all participating in those issues.
I absolutely agree. So we've got a short clip here about some of the youth issues, and we'll be right back after this.
My name is Samantha O'Connor, and I'm originally from Kempville, Ontario, which is a small little hick town outside of Ottawa. I'm a third-year student at the University of Guelph-Humber, and I'm taking journalism.
She told me that some people were making a documentary about her, and I said, oh, what have you done? And she said, I've been through quite a lot.
I became homeless because I was born into a really bad situation. My parents, both of them, they met in AA. They're both recovered alcoholics, but they both found a new addiction, which is religion. And my mom basically thinks that everything she does is justified by God. She would throw the line at me from the Bible, spare the rod, spoil the child, which basically means, like, discipline your children and teach them what's right from wrong.
I've been drinking on this corner since September. I've been drinking on this corner since last year.
My mom used to beat the crap out of me. She used to beat me with a 2x4. She called it the Board of Education.
Her home life at home hasn't been the greatest life to live.
Where do you stay?
Under the gardener for now because nobody wants to rent me.
I live at the YWCA shelter downtown Toronto. This poem I wrote whenever I was 10 years old. Right after a fight with my mom, I remember she slapped me across the face and my face was burning and she threw me in my room. I had a lock on the outside of my room, so every time I was bad, my mom would just lock me in there. And I remember sitting in front of the mirror and I drew myself and then I wrote this poem. My face is red from sorrow. My eyes are filled with tears. I sit here holding my face as it burns. I hear the voices in my head screaming at me aloud. Oh, I wish today had never come. The stinging is going away. As I draw, I feel better. I'm letting my feelings flow through the pencil. My tears dry all up and I feel safer. For now the screaming has gone softer. My face is still red and my feelings are still down.
And I know that people from every background and every aspiration are among the people represented as the people who do not have a place they call home.
I don't see myself as homeless. I see myself as the ultimate bohemian. Most bohemians, they give up a life of wealth to live in a life of poverty so that they could focus more on their art and their music and inspiration because it keeps them more focused. So that's basically what I'm doing. I was 4 years old. I used to go to church and I hated it because my mom's like crazy evangelical.
Her situation right now, from being at home and living at the shelter, she's probably the happiest she's ever been because there she has friends, she even feels like she has family there, and she has a nice warm bed to go to every night, and she's able to make it to school. Without going to school, she wouldn't be able to be doing things as she is, and she wouldn't be here today.
Everything that I see, all the drama and things that scar me, I just use that as my inspiration. There's no negative, it's only lessons.
There was a girl who was supposed to perform tonight, and her name was Melissa, and she passed away on Thursday, and so she never made it tonight to be able to perform. And that really hit me, and I was like, you know, she missed her moment.
Being homeless doesn't really have anything to do with it. As long as you make, like, your friends your home, then I guess you have a family.
Keep your spirits up and realize that everything that you're going through is for a reason. You're getting all these trials and tribulations thrown at you so you can learn to become the person that you're destined to be. You're destined to do great things, and just while you're in all the negative, just realize that and use that as inspiration and be like, I'm learning stuff from this and this is making me a better person, and just run with it.
So there's a positive homeless person.
Yeah, that was lovely.
Not always that positive outlook that you run into?
No, I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of funny one year, I think this was about 2 years ago or so, we have an annual fire inspection, right? We had a fire inspector come in to do the annual inspection. And it comes into the lobby, and people are laughing and joking around. And he said, wow, it's really not a place I expected to hear laughter, right? And the funny thing about homelessness is, you know, that doesn't mean you're always depressed, right? Or, you know, wallowing in your sorrow. I mean, I think that people who do experience homelessness tend to, you know, draw on their own strengths that we all kind of have in order to get through a circumstance that might not be the best in their life. But, you know, certainly we see a lot of people who have kind of an upbeat attitude and really want to kind of get through the next day and hopefully do really well for themselves.
That's what we like to hear, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're doing amazing work there, and keep up the great work there at Unity Project. And you know, keep the Band-Aid stocked up.
Yeah. Absolutely.
If people want more information on Unity, how do they find that?
Pardon me? Sorry?
How do they find more information on Unity Project?
Oh, we do have a website, unityproject.ca.
Wonderful.
And, yeah, there's lots of information there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it, and hopefully we can break some of those stereotypes down and you know, help things get a little bit better.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Great. And we at Between the Margins will be back after these commercial breaks.
We are all in this.
And welcome back to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce, and this is a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. And as I see it, and in talking to guests and everything else, you know, you've got, there's a saying in business, you know, you've got to spend money to make money. And I think that's the part that, in my opinion, City Hall is missing the boat. They need to spend some money and save some money in the process. And by solving the homeless issue, you know, we're going to have less people on the street, and we're going to have people in homes. They're going to be healthy and contributing members of society. And, you know, one person that shares a lot of those views is Abe Uchern, who I had the pleasure of talking to yesterday. And I'm going to bring that interview to you now.
Yeah, my name is Dr. Abe Uchern. I am a professor of nursing at the University of Western Ontario, as well as the vice chair of the London Homeless Coalition and founder of the London Homelessness Outreach Network.
So why are you passionate about this, Abe?
You know, I'm passionate about this because I had a family member who went through an experience of homelessness. And, you know, I'll be honest, I grew up middle class, sheltered, suburban, and really had no idea about these issues. And then when my brother ended up drifting for a couple of years, he said to me, I was becoming a nurse at the time. He said, if you ever have a chance to work with people who are homeless, try it out and see what you think. And he just kind of started planting some seeds, challenging some of my own stigmas and prejudices and just asking me questions about why things are the way they are. And I did that. I worked at the London Intercommunity Health Center in their health outreach program for people who are homeless. And it just opened my eyes to a whole different side of the world and a whole different way of understanding. And I basically, in working with those folks for a number of years, I just, and going on to become a professor, I said, you know, I'm going to dedicate my life to these individuals that I worked with and make sure that everything that I do is meaningful for someone who's living on the streets and living in shelter. So that's where my passion came from. It was my brother who challenged me, and the people that I work with who helped me see things differently.
I mean, everybody thinks they know about homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And like every issue that I ever cover on the show, They probably don't.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a nutshell, what don't they know?
I think the issue with homelessness, I would say, that we most often forget is that it is entirely preventable. If we decided today that we weren't going to have homelessness anymore, we could do that. What do I mean by that? I mean that it's very much to do with our policies and our politics, and those reflect our values. You look at places like Norway or Sweden, who have very similar societies, very similar wealth and whatnot, you know, less than a tenth of the homelessness that we have in Canada. And that's simply because they have decided that they're willing to pay through their taxes and their policies to make homelessness not happen. People often say homelessness is a choice, and when they say that, they're basically accusing individuals of bad choices. I would say homelessness is a choice, and it's a choice that we as a society choose to have through our policy.
Okay, but I don't want to put the blame on homeless people for raising taxes, because I know the tax burden and the tax rate in Norway, and it's not as high as Canada.
Right, and so why is it that a Canadian would say, you know, I don't want homelessness, but they would also say, you know, I'm happy with our politics and our policies the way they are? I think it's because we tend to say, I don't want homelessness, so I want the homeless people to solve it. We less often kind of reflect inwards and say, I don't want homelessness, so what am I going to do about it, and what am I going to expect that my government does about it?
So what are some of the things that we're doing here in London to address the issue?
Sure, yeah. I mean, and it's not for lack of trying, I guess, at a number of levels. Most importantly, we do have our community plan on homelessness. And so this is a 5-year plan, and it's really looking at a number of steps along the way that we need to take, from very specific things like particular populations that need more attention, such as sex workers, to much broader level things like our very model of care and our model of response. So the focus of that community plan is on switching our mode, and our current mode is a little bit of prevention, a whole lot of managing people while they're experiencing homelessness, and a little bit of rehousing. So the plan has us switching that mode to doing a lot more prevention, a lot more rehousing, and a lot less of just managing people in their homelessness. So I think that community plan is a big part of what we're doing. And the nice thing about that plan is it's really a collaboration between all the social service agencies. So that's through a group called the Homeless Coalition. And that's a collaboration with the city, who, as you probably know, municipalities are the ones responsible for homelessness. So all the funding from provinces and feds around homelessness comes through the municipality. So there's a really nice partnership there between the agencies and between the government to work, make sure that plan has life.
So the city is a big partner on this. Who else is working hard in the city?
Yeah, so the city is a big partner, and we're fortunate in that way that we just happen to have the right people in the right positions at this time who do actually care about this as an issue. The other big partners, of course, would be those agencies that do the most direct care. So, for example, our major shelters here in town, Women's Community House, Men's Mission, Salvation Army Unity Project. But also, we've been making a lot of efforts on the mental health front as well. And so agencies that do kind of community-based mental health treatment, like WATCH, are big partners. And then I guess myself and some of my colleagues represent academics. And so there's a number at the university here in healthcare, mental health, addictions, but also people who are interested in housing policy, women's health, violence, who are partners on it. So in addition to kind of academics and agencies and the city, you also have people with lived experience who get involved in various ways as well. And then lastly, which is the most interesting kind of development in London, I would say, is starting to have some property developers get involved. So the chair actually right now of the Homeless Coalition is a property developer who is involved a lot in social housing and really wanted to be involved in some of the planning and solution work as well, instead of just providing the housing. So that's, I think that's really cool to see kind of the private sector as a partner as well.
I've always been a firm believer that you can't solve any problem in silos.
Absolutely.
So tell me about the research side of it.
Yeah, I mean, the research that I do, you know, well, often when we think about research, we think about, you know, a really big, you know, StatsCan kind of projects where we're getting lots of numbers and data and that kind of stuff. So that's not really the type of research that I do and that interests me. The type of research I do is called participatory action research. And the idea is really working with communities so that people identify their own issues and identify their own solutions to those issues. And so then myself as a researcher, I simply become a resource to work with people and help them access funding to make things happen, help them access policy reports perhaps, and then just help coordinate in doing the research. I mean, so that's why I, as an academic, actually spend maybe only, 60% of my time at the university, the rest of my time out in the community, because I want to, I don't want to just come up with some projects, get a bunch of numbers and you know, spit them out into wherever. But I want to work with real people, with real issues, solving real problems, and so getting out in the community with people to do that.
So what are you finding? What is your research finding? Are the solutions?
Yeah, so the project that we've been working on the past year is really focused on healthcare. And so what we know about healthcare for people who are homeless is that they get it's really piecemeal. So they access a whole ton of different things at a whole ton of different places. And so a shelter might start having a nurse, or a drop-in center might have a mental health provider of some kind. And then the person might also access kind of every other agency, like hospitals and walk-in centers. And so really it's a whole mishmash of services that don't work particularly in any coordinated manner. So what we've been working on this past year is really getting that picture of what that looks like in London. So who's doing what, and really talking to the people who use the services and say, what's good about this and what's not so good about this. And so we've developed kind of that map, kind of a service map of the health services for homeless people in London. And then this year what we're going to be doing is taking all of that and saying, okay, so what's working well with this and what's not working well with this? And so what can we do? So are there redundancies that we could eliminate? Are there big gaps that we still have? Are there points of connection and collaboration that we're missing? So that's really what my current research is looking at. And basically trying to just do better rather than doing it piecemeal.
So that piecemeal is the big problem that's facing homelessness right now?
In terms of healthcare, yeah, absolutely. In terms of healthcare, it's the fact that people are going so many different places that don't communicate with each other and still having terrible outcomes. So although they're accessing all these different services, we know the average age of death of a homeless person in Canada is still 47 years. In spite of all these things that we're putting into place for people, it's not working. A big part of that is kind of that lack of collaboration of primary care services. And secondly, the lack of recognizing that other things in people's life are just as or more important for their health care than just medicine. So housing and food and income support are all huge factors for people's health and need to be kind of thought of when we're thinking about health care for people who are homeless.
So we're doing a lot of work managing and it's not getting us anywhere is basically what you're telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not doing so much on the prevent side.
Exactly, yeah.
So what do we need to do to on the prevention side?
So we do know that homelessness isn't usually just, everything's together and then poof, you're homeless. There are stories of that kind of rapid situation, but the majority is a kind of a stepwise progression of being dehoused. So for many, you have a job, you have family, you have community, and then things start to fall apart kind of a piece at a time. So that might be related to a mental illness, it might be related to addiction, but the employment might become problematic, and employment might be lost. Family relationships start to break down, or already strained relationships are strained to the point that they break. Violence might be entering kind of the life of a couple, and the women's experiencing that violence and looking for safety. And so then the housing is kind of one of the last things that usually goes in that progression. So people might be moving from owned housing to rented housing, from rented housing to doubling up with friends. And so there's usually kind of a stepwise progression. And there's a ton of places along the way that we can intervene for that. And so when someone, for example, is facing an eviction because of a substance use problem, there are all kinds of ways that we could intervene in order to support them and start treating the substance use issue and preventing that eviction. So I think that's another important thing to think about homelessness is it's a process of being dehoused. Where are kind of the stopgap points where we could prevent people from losing their housing?
And then there's the rehab of the people once they are homeless.
If we don't manage to prevent it, and then it happens that they become homeless, then absolutely the thing is, how can we rapidly get them back into a housing situation? Because irregardless of the cause, whether it be mental health, addictions, simply lack of income related to employment, we know that the number one stabilizing factor for people's lives is the housing. Treating a mental illness or treating an addiction while someone is still in the kind of the chaos, the tornado of homelessness, isn't effective. Better to get people rapidly rehoused, and then you can start focusing on the issues. And all the research around North America and Europe has shown that housing first is the answer.
And tell us about housing first.
So housing first is the idea that stabilizing someone's housing creates the basis on which you can then work on the rest of the conditions that led to someone's homelessness. And one of the other things that's nice about housing first is it's actually cheaper. It's actually cheaper to provide someone with social housing than it is to pay for them to be in shelter or in hospital or in mental health care, wherever else they might have ended up. It's cheaper per month to have someone in social housing, affordable housing. And so that's the idea is take someone who's got into crisis and just get them into a unit, get them into social housing, and then start looking at, okay, what are the other pieces that are out of control here? What's your social assistance look like? What's your employment look like? What's your family life look like? But first, just get you settled.
Okay, and what services do we have in London to do that?
We have housing services. I mean, we have a whole division of housing in London. Provides social housing upwards of 60 or 70 different providers doing housing in London. Problem being that the wait list for affordable housing in London runs 8.2 years on average. So that's a problem. Because
that's not housing first.
Yeah, if we're trying to rapidly rehouse someone, I don't think 8.2 years qualifies as rapid. And so we have an affordable housing crisis. We have an absolute glut of affordable housing. There's 4,300 families on the wait list. We have currently we have a community strategy for housing with a plan to build 1,200 units over the next 5 years. Do the math on that, 4,500 on the wait list, 1,200 new units.
Over 5 years.
We're not going to solve the problem over the next 5 years, and you keep doing that math, and it's going to be 25 or more years, assuming things don't get any worse, which our economy isn't looking great, but assuming it doesn't get any worse, we're 25 years out of actually solving our waitlist issue. So that's a problem.
That's a huge problem.
So to think about that problem, you need to think about the different levels of government. Affordable housing requires investments from federal, provincial, and municipal governments. Our municipal government here in London has some of our best successes with affordable housing because they invest a lot. So we invest millions of dollars every year from municipal tax dollars. Province has a pretty good affordable housing strategy, and that's just rolled out another, I think it was $10 million into the London area. The federal government is slashing and has been for many years their affordable housing spending. And I would suggest that that's kind of the root of the crisis. The current Minister of Health, Minister Finlay, said that they do not believe that housing Minister of Housing, said that she doesn't believe housing is a federal issue.
So even though Harper is taking full credit for creating Housing First, and
sure.
and of course it was all his idea, and it's such a great concept, what you're telling me is that they're not actually telling us the truth.
Yeah, no, I mean, see, they're taking credit for monies that are already, planned investment. And so, X million of dollars coming out this year. And so they do this big press release. But what's really tricky in what they're doing is how they're hiding the decreased investment. So the way they've done it is there's all this money that's been invested into mortgages for affordable housing. And so all they're doing is anytime a mortgage is complete, they're not reinvesting that spending. If this year they're spending $400 million in housing, in paying off mortgage, and $50 million of that gets paid off, next year instead of taking that $50 million and investing it in new housing, it's just disappearing. So the next year they spend $350 million. And then the next year it's $300 million. And they have actually outlined a budget for, I think it's about 2025, 2027, to be paying $0 into housing. And so they're saying, oh, we're not cutting any funding. It's just these things get paid off, and so then we don't have to spend that money anymore.
On one email to someone that I was talking to about this show, she says, well, I could sum up housing by saying housing sucks.
Really at that personal level, it in terms of someone who is at the point where they are requiring a lot of assistance from the government, the housing part is absolutely the worst part of their life. Because in healthcare, we got a lot of problems, but they can get there. They can find a nurse practitioner-led clinic, for example, that might take them on. Social assistance, I mean, the rates are terrible, but the Ontario Works workers tend to be pretty good to work with, and they can get their assistance checks going. Housing, it does suck because the person goes and says, I'm in crisis, and they say, okay, we'll put you on the wait list. And say, okay, well, I'm on the wait list. Where am I on the wait list? Oh, yeah, your number like 4,000 and 4,200. And, so what's kind of the timeline? Yeah, 8 years. And it's like, okay, so I'm making $592, and average market rent for a bachelor is like $580. So what am I supposed to do for the next 8 years? Well, your only options at that point are either spend your entire income on your housing or get into substandard housing, into slumlord situations, into doubling up, tripling up. We have situations where families in London are living 3-4 families in a 3-bedroom apartment. So, yeah, housing sucks from that personal experience of poverty. Yeah. It absolutely sucks.
I run a community center where I run crisis management, and, I mean, I've had 2 or 3 people living in one of my board of directors' pool house with a space heater just to get some kind of roof over their head, and there's no answers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you do? You People have to have shelter.
Yep.
It's that or die.
Yeah. And, it's a tricky part because, I mean, we don't want to, we don't want to lower our standards, right? So in Vancouver, they've gone with the single room occupancy model. And so basically people are just warehoused in these small rooms with, shared bathrooms. In London, we've said we don't qualify that as housing. That's not adequate to what we consider.
that's just a roof.
Yeah, that's a roof. It's not a home. But it's that tricky balance, right? So then what else does someone do? If they can't afford the only options, and we don't want to degrade and we don't want to just start warehousing people. But unfortunately, what happens is you get this kind of gray market where there are slumlords who do that. They add, a million little additions or chop up a little rabbit warren in a basement, put seven people down in there. And there's a market for that, unfortunately, because people have nowhere else to go.
Yeah, and, in talking with some of the co-ops in town, and they want credit checks, they want all of this stuff for perfect tenants to move into these types of situations. And I don't know what your experience is, but most of the people that I'm trying to solve crisis housing for, credit is the first thing that went out the window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? The co-ops is a brilliant model. In a lot of ways, and it's worked in New York. I mean, they had a crisis in the 80s, and the co-ops exploded, and that saved them there. Unfortunately, the problem with co-ops is that they need to be in the black, right? They can't be losing money. And so what happens is if you have a lot of tenants who start to get into crisis, so they have mental health challenges, addictions, or whatever, and this becomes a situation where now the co-op is having to work on an eviction, right? And so then that goes before the Ontario Municipal Board. Now we got to pay a lawyer. And so what starts to happen with the co-ops is that every tenant that they have a challenge with takes out of the bottom line of it, right? And so that makes it harder for them to offer units at a reasonable price. The co-op model can't live on its own. It has to have housing support workers through the City of London would be a good example, who could come in when they have a kind of a client who's in crisis or a resident who's in crisis. Someone else could come in and help support them. Otherwise, co-ops, they just become like any other apartment. The rents are high, they have big credit checks, and you need references and all those things. So if you want co-ops to solve affordable housing, you need to support them as a city, for example, with workers.
And we keep cutting workers.
Yeah, we do, actually. We're just in the budget review right now for next year, and they've created an ad cut list of it was about 26, 28 items, and two of those items that are up for potential cutting are housing-related items. Yeah, and emailing my counselors today, actually. Telling them that might not be a good long-term idea.
I mean, how do you have housing first, an 8.2-year waiting list, co-ops that are going bankrupt because of the legal hassles that come around when crisis happens and there's no support for people, and the system is spiraling into the ground?
The numbers of people experiencing homelessness are going up. The number of people on Ontario Works caseloads are going up, and the waiting list is going up. So we can either, keep throwing our hands up and saying, I don't want to pay any more taxes and leave me alone. And as long as things are fine with me, I don't want to worry about it. Or we can say, we don't want a city in crisis. We want a healthy city. We want zero homelessness. And so what are we going to do about it? Are we willing to pay for it? Are we willing to pressure our governments to pay for it?
I mean, as long as people are homeless, they're not going to be productive members of our society. And as long as we don't have a productive society, we have no taxes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the calculations on human waste, I'm not an economist, but there are some through, for example, the Canadian Centers for Policy Alternatives have done calculations on how much human capital we're just throwing away. It's not good for anyone for us to have poverty. Poverty is expensive. It costs us more to have people in poverty than it does to have people self-sustained.
And you've been listening to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce, and thanks to Kim and DJ in the booth and all of our guests today. If you want to listen to more of our shows, you can catch us on the web at www.betweenthemargins.ca. Have yourself your happily ever after, however that looks like to you.